My name's Ray Bapty. I was born in March 1933 in Leeds at St James's Hospital. And I grew up in Leeds, spent all my life in Leeds until I started work. But prior to that, I went to, well, I started Beckett Street School, and then I went to Gipton School, and then I passed my scholarship and went to Leeds Central High School, and I was there from being 11 to 16.
Which district of Leeds was that that you grew up in? What was it called?
Burmantofts.
Right. And what kind of an area was it growing up there? That was during the Second World War, basically,
wasn't
it?
Most of it was, yeah. And it was a typical back-to-back area, lots of back-to-back street houses and things like that, working-class people. My mum was a housewife looking after the family, and my dad was a labourer with Leeds Corporation. He'd worked with them. He'd been out of work quite a while in the 20s, and then he managed to get a job at Leeds Corporation just before I was born, and he worked with them until he retired when he was 65. I got my school certificate with six credits.
So that means you were relatively well qualified other people.
Yeah, it's quite a good scholarship, really. Yeah. I left school in 1949 and went to the, whatever it was called in those days, but like the job centre, and they recommended a few places, had a few interviews. YEB, I had an interview at the YEB and somewhere else. And then I got an interview for the railways, and I started at Leeds Hunslet Lane, the goods depot. And I worked on the railways for just over 40 years.
Tell me a little bit about that first job then at Hunslet Lane. What did that involve?
Well, it was in the forwarding office. There was no teaching. You just picked the job up as you went along. They said, do this, do that. Answer the phone, and I don't think I'd ever spoken on the phone before I went into the office. You know, the phone rang. It was one of these old candlestick phones where if you turned away, of course, you lost the sound, or they lost the sound. But it got used to it, and quite a good little office. And after I'd been there 6 months, I went on to what they call shipping, and that was doing the invoices for goods that were being sent from Leeds Hunslet Lane. And it was a late turn working, because all the goods came in the afternoon and then they were sent out in the evening. So you then spent your time typing out. Well, initially you start writing them out, the invoices, but then you had these old typewriters, which are all capital letter typewriters. So you went onto those and worked on those. And we worked till 10 o'clock, but at busy times would work till 11, 12 o'clock at night. They had a system whereby they worked out an average of how many invoices you could do. So if you were quick, you'd finish at 10 o'clock and the boss would say, I'm going to book you off at 12 o'clock tonight, so you get 2 hours overtime. But we didn't go home because nothing had to do at home, sort of thing. We used to sit and play cards until 12 o'clock and then catch the late bus home or late tram. Yeah.
What was a forwarding office? I don't quite understand what that means.
Well, they dealt with the queries for goods that had been forwarded. People had come in, ringing or writing and say, we've sent something from Leeds on such and such a date and it hasn't been received. So you had to check the invoices and say, well, that went forward on such and such a wagon to Bristol or wherever it was, and then pass that forward to Bristol and see if they get any trace of it. And quite often you'd get it coming back and saying, oh, this was signed for on the such and such a date, and then you could pass that back to where, you know, from where the queries come from.
What were the people like you were working with? You kind of seem, it seems as though you're painting a picture of something that's almost Victorian in the way the railway was, even in the 1950s.
It was indeed, yeah. Well, most of them were either quite old, well into the 50s, maybe 60s, you know, because they'd worked their way up through the ranks. And then there was this other group who were in their middle 20s, or could just come out of the forces. And then there were a few, like myself, who were lads, just joining. So there was a mixture of that. So, yeah, we had a good time, really.
Would you describe yourself as a railway enthusiast? Is that why you went to work on the railway?
No, not particularly, no. I mean, I like travelling by train, but I want, for want of a better word, a train spotter. I mean, I'd done a bit of it when I was at school and that, but I wouldn't say I'd, I went, didn't deliberately go to the station to watch trains and things like that.
And did you have an ambition as such when you were in a teenage worker?
No, I didn't. I think most people got a job and they thought, that's it now for life. Not like today, where they're always looking for something better. But I did manage to progress quite well.
So how come you ended up at Woodlesford?
After I'd done my 2 years national service, when I came out of the forces, I thought, after I'd had a week's leave or so, I thought, I'll go back down to Hunslet Lane and tell them I'm back home. But they said, oh, no, we've no vacancies here now. We're going to send you to Woodlesford to work. So fair enough. And I knew of Woodlesford only because when I was shipping, anything that came from Woodlesford, you used to type in Leeds Hunslet Lane for Woodlesford. That's how it was described. And then you knew where it was being picked up from.
What year was that when you came out of the force?
1953, yeah. Middle of July.
And had you been to Woodlesford at all?
No.
To visit it before then?
No, never, no.
So they said you had to go to Woodlesford, and what job did they say that you had to do there?
Well, they just said, you know, work in the office there, and it was something really new. Oh, just going back to that, prior to joining the Air Force, I'd done railway night school, goods and passenger station working, and I'd done both of those, so I'd passed both those. So I suppose I thought, oh, well, this can do goods and do a bit of passenger as well. But Woodlesford was mainly passengers, although they didn't get a right lot of passengers in those days. But you got a varied amount of parcels and things like that, small things. And then the van drivers, they used to go collecting, but they collected goods that they took to Hunslet Lane as well. Yeah.
So can you remember your first day working there?
Not particularly. I remember meeting Mr. Swaby, the station master, and with his pipe in his mouth, as usual, and introducing me to the other two lads who were there. And then he got to know the different ones who came in to the office, you know, the porters and signalmen and checkers and things like that, because they had a fair number of staff for a small station. They had a big payroll, really.
Can you remember how many that would be?
They had the signalman from Woodlesford. They had the checkers and number takers who were working at Skelton Grange. They had the signalmen and crossing keepers who worked at Methley. And the porters and signalmen who worked at Altoffs and Whitwood. So, all in all, for those three stations, there must have been 20, 25 people. A bit different from nowadays, I think, where there's nobody. As I used to do the payable, that's one of the things I got to do in the payable there. And he had one payable for the Mr. Swaby, I think he was paid monthly. He had another payable for the ones who were paid fortnightly, and another payable for the ones who were paid weekly. So, to say there were so few people, and he had these three payables to do. And then he used to get the wages through and pay them out on the Friday, as it was then, yeah.
Can you describe what the station was like physically when you went into the station area, and what could you see? What kind of buildings were there, and where did you work in all of that?
Well, the main buildings, which were as you went into the little booking hall, and then there was a booking office, and in the back of the booking office was Mr. Swaby's office, and then there were toilets and things outside. And Mr. Swaby's house, of course, was separate from the station, but just about 50 yards away through the station yard. And the other side of the station, it was just a platform with a little, if I remember rightly, just a little shelter there, you know, across the crossing.
What was the atmosphere like?
Oh, it was quite a happy little atmosphere, you know. We had some, yeah, not as free and easy as it was shipping office, because there you're on late turn and you were really the only ones there then, and you didn't have any contact with any bosses or anything like that. You worked on your own and you just got on with it. There you could get people dropping in who you didn't know, and so you had to be on your guard, really. Station was almost, as you say, Victorian, still on gas lights, no electricity, and the porters used to look after these, and you used to have to pull the chains to light them and pull a chain to switch them off. And of course they had these things in the gas lights that very delicate. If you touch them, they just drop to pieces. I can't remember what to call those things.
The mantle.
Mantles, that's right, yeah. Just touch those and they drop to pieces. And there was one just above your head where you booked tickets, so that used to be buzzing away above your head, you know, singeing your hair nearly. When I first went to Huddersfield, there were two clerks there, one called Dennis Jackson and one called Joe Jessop. Now, Joe Jessop, he was the clerk for Methley. So he spent part of his time at Muddersfield and part of his time at Methley. And, of course, there was Mr Swerby, the station master. There was a chap called Joe Harrison. He was quite elderly. He was the goods checker. And then they had two porters. One was called Fred James. And then they had number takers who worked down at Skelton Grange Power Station. And the signalman. And I can remember most of those just odd names because they were on the payroll. There was one called Jim Wint, who was a signalman at Woodlesford, and then there was the Ken Free, and then there were two leading porters at Altoffs and Whitwood, which was under Mr Swerby's jurisdiction. That was Austin Grindle and Jack Wright, I think they call him, but they were really good chaps, those.
Because they didn't have any clerks down at Altoffs, did they?
No clerks at Altoffs, and they did all the bookkeeping and everything. And we used to just go down there to finish it off and then more or less send the monthly returns away based on what they'd done.
Do you know if they'd worked there for a very long time? Had they any of those blokes worked there since before the Second World War?
Oh, yes. I think most of them had, although I think Freddie, the porter, he'd been in the Second World War, so as far as I gathered. But they didn't really talk about that. He got very little mention of the war, really. One of the regular visits we had was from the district auditor. And in those days, the auditors were nearly like gods. And this particular one, Freddie Weddle, and he was a chain smoker. And when he was checking the books and records and things, he'd be smoking cigarettes all the time, and he'd have ash about an inch long on his cigarette, and then it would just drop off onto him and he'd just brush it off. So there's ash all over his clothes. He came in once and he said to the other clerk who was there when I first went, Dennis Jackson, he said to him, can you show me paper tickets so-and-so, which you've got registered on your list? So Dennis went looking through all these ticket drawers. Oh, and he must have been looking for an hour. And some of these drawers had never been opened for ages, so they were really dirty old things. And in the end he says, I'm sorry, Mr Weddle, I don't seem to be able to find it. And Mr Weddle says, I'm not surprised, Mr Jackson. He sent those tickets to audit 6 months ago, and of course he'd never cancelled them from his records.
Oh, I
see. So they're still recorded on as being at the station.
So he was winding him up, really?
He was, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, heck.
And what was the auditor's job? What did he actually do in terms of the passengers and the goods?
All he did was check the books that you'd done and compared them with the records that had gone to the revenue accountants at Newcastle. And just compare them to make sure that there was no hanky-panky going on.
The auditor was a sort of feared official.
Very much so, yes. Oh, yes. He never got warned of when he was coming. He just dropped in and said, I'm the auditor, and just don't touch anything. He'd check your balance, check your float and everything like that.
What was the booking office like? How big was it? What was the atmosphere like in the booking office?
Booking office one. Particularly big, and not much bigger than a normal living room, but attached to it was a small office where the station master sat. A big old desk, as like in old railway offices. But yeah, it was a good office, yeah.
And what were the tickets like?
Oh, the old Edmondson ones, where you used to have to put them in the ticket puncher, turn them round if there were returns, and if there were singles, some of them you had to cut them in half. If there were singles or children's tickets, you cut them in half, sorry. All things like that. So you had to be careful that you didn't lose any of these bits of tickets that you cut in pieces, because that was half a ticket. I know going on a bit, but when I worked at Leeds, I know the day return to Manchester was six shillings and sixpence when I worked in the Leeds City booking office. So that'll give you some idea of what the fares were from Woodlesford. Most fares that he booked were to Leeds, but he did book odd ones to Sheffield, but very few really.